Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to the Sales Platoon Podcast, where strategy meets storytelling, right at the crossroads of the battlefield and the business front. We'll bring you tactics, triumphs, and truths from the trenches of sales. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Welcome back, guys. Thank you so much for joining us again. I'm with our guest, John Elzinga, who is actually, I've been excited to talk about since we talked when I was in the Bahamas, a fellow Ranger, has really taken the transition from the military into the civilian world by the freaking horns. John, so great to have you with us today. Thanks for coming on.
Likewise, John, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be on this call and having the chance to speak to everybody.
Man, so you and I served at roughly the same time. Tell our audience, what year did you come in? What'd you do? And how'd you end up doing all the crazy stuff you did while you were in the military?
So I graduated college in 1991, and I had a pretty average grade point average. The job market was not great in 1991. And I remember watching Desert Storm with my roommates, my housemates in my apartment in college, and thinking, this is something I want to do. I don't have a lineage. My father was not a general or a sergeant major, but I was intrigued by what our Army did, watching General Schwarzkopf give the press briefings with his big long pointer and saying, that is what I want to do. So I made a decision, and I went and talked to the recruiter back home in New Jersey at the time. And when I walked into the recruiting station, it's funny, he said, we don't have any infantry spots available, but we have this 95 Bravo spot, military police. It's a lot like infantry. You'll love it. And 25, 30 years later, I realized that he was just looking to fill a spot.
Yeah, so right.
I learned really quick that infantry, they always need infantry.
Always.
So I was able to navigate through that, and I enlisted as a 95 Bravo at the old Fort McClellan, Alabama. I shipped off to boot camp in AIT back in 1992, and I became a military policeman. And they assigned me to Fort Benning, Georgia. And I was with a military police company at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I wanted to be an officer. I wanted to go to OCS. And my chain of command did not support me originally. And then I remember one day after an activity run, the whole military police activity, we went on a run. And the colonel, the provost marshal, an old special forces officer from Vietnam, said, I need a driver. And I raised my hand. And my chain of command looked at me and said, what are you doing raising your hand? And the colonel said, all right, you, come see me later today. Company commanders make it happen. And I went and interviewed with the provost marshal at Fort Benning, Georgia, and I became his driver. And I became close to him. I considered him a friend. And he helped me get my officer candidate school packet ready to go.
Nice.
And I went to officer candidate school in 1993. And I was off and running. And I became an infantry officer. So my dream to go infantry came true finally. And I went to officer candidate school. I went to IOBC. I went to Airborne School. I went to Ranger School. And I reported to the 101st Airborne Division Air Assault. And I was an infantry officer in the Mighty Rockazons.
Yep.
And I know John and I connected on that. And it's funny, John, you and I, we didn't even know it. Two things that John and I learned about each other. A, We were five people apart in our Ranger School graduation picture. And I was in 3187 and he was in 1187. And we literally were probably 20 feet away from each other and didn't even know it.
And didn't even know it. That's such a, you know, so it's so funny you brought that up too, because I remember sitting there, I was in the Bahamas looking at the picture because we had our call when I was in the Bahamas. I'm like, holy shit, man, he's right there. Like, you know, and it just kind of shows how interconnected everything is. So number one, we have a small tribe, but I just found you on LinkedIn. Like, I didn't know who you were. You didn't know who I was. And here we were in the same unit in the same Ranger class. It's absolutely insane.
And it's funny because I share people, I share the story, John, about how we were in the same Ranger class together. And the questions I get is, have you been in contact? And I'm like, when you graduate Ranger school, you don't even know these people.
Yeah.
You probably started in this in different Ranger classes. And I had to recycle Florida. And so of all phases to recycle, graduation phase, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, John, all the, you know, they told you all about the mountains and how hard the mountains was. I breezed through the mountains. And then I get to Florida and everybody's like, oh, we're 10 days from being done. And Florida kicked my butt and I had to do it twice. And
wow.
There we were at the same Ranger photo. So yeah, I was a rifle platoon leader with 3187. And then I was a battalion support platoon leader for 3187. And then I was a rifle company XO for 3187, all with 3rd Brigade, 101st. We did a deployment to Sinai. We did the MFO mission. And then I came back from MFO, was a rifle company executive officer. Then my career went forward. I went to the infantry officer advanced course. And then I was assigned to be a platoon trainer at infantry officer basic course. And then my last job in the Army was I was an S1. For 3rd Brigade, 3rd Infantry Division, which is right there at Fort Benning.
Yeah.
And then at that point, my wife and I went on a ski trip, and I kind of knew I was done at that point. I never really joined the military with a long-term 20, 30-year vision. I just wanted to get to a certain point, and I felt like at that point I had done what I wanted to do, and I was ready to move on. So I made a decision to move into the civilian world, and I remember coming back from my ski trip, telling the battalion commander I wanted to get out. He said, no, you're not. You're going to be company commander of Charlie Company. I said, sir, I appreciate that, but I'm ready to move on. So the separation was good. It was on my terms. And I really feel like I had done everything I wanted to achieve in the military. So the next step up for me. Go ahead,
what year was that? What year did you finally get out?
1999.
99. Oh, man.
Long time ago. And
yeah,
I remember the transition very clearly, and it was interesting. Like, I learned a lot in that transition, and it's like, what am I going to do now? And I knew the job market was pretty good back then, but I went to the Junior Military Recruiter Conference, and the Junior Military Recruiting Conference was helpful in a lot of ways. They were able to tee up some interviews, but I remember the JMO conference. They tend to lump you in together. They say, well, you're an infantry officer. You're more of an operations person. You're not really a salesperson. And I realized doing self-reflection at that time that actually sales was up my alley. I knew I wanted to be in sales. I knew that the money potential in sales is really good. But I wanted to be in sales leadership as well, too, because I felt like looking back, a lot of what we did in the infantry was selling. When you try to motivate squads and platoons and a company level element to crawl through the mud at night, do it right the first time on a training exercise,
yep,
you're doing a lot of selling. You're persuading people, you're leading people, you're getting people to do things that they wouldn't normally do. So part of that is leadership, and part of that is just being persuasive. And I remember talking about that in the interview. So I started out in pharmaceutical sales. When I left the Army, I interviewed with a couple of different companies, and I went on with one particular company. And I remember the hiring manager telling me, you don't have any sales experience. Why should I hire you? And I gave him that specific example of being a company executive officer on a training exercise when the company commander got shot and leading a whole element, a 100-man company through the mud at Fort Campbell one night, getting through the breach, getting the high ground, and doing an AAR saying, good mission. What went well? What didn't do well? And I just remember at that point, I knew that if I could do that individually and work with teams, I could probably certainly convince doctors to use certain pharmaceutical products, and that answer went well. But the other thing that the hiring manager told me was, we talked later on, I said, why did you hire me? You interviewed a lot of people who have specific experience in this field. And his answer was interesting. He said, John, because I knew you had the leadership to not cave in to some of the, you know, bad apples that are on the team right now. Some people that are on the team that aren't working hard. We knew you were going to go out and be self-disciplined and accomplish the mission. So right then and there, it's just what we do in the military, what we did in the military, positions us so well in the civilian market for sure. And the thing that I learned above all at that junior military recruiting conference was don't let the world tell you what you are and what you're not. Do some self-reflection, find out your strengths, find out your weaknesses, and aim high and go for it. And that's exactly what I did during the transition.
Yeah. That's such an important thing. I was speaking with a West Point graduate on our last episode. And one of the things that he said was, and it's very similar to what you're talking about now, that he was told from a very young age in the military, don't let your career decide your career. You decide your career and be proactive about the steps. And I love that you're saying that for the transition as well. Don't let other people define who you are or what you can do. You grab it and you do it. That's such an important part. Now, 99. So I want to ask two questions about this. So question number one is, when you were transitioning, what kind of support did you get? Did you know anything getting out?
I knew very little because I didn't know. My best support was fellow officers that I served with that were making a similar transition. So part of that was seeing what they did, but really it was just me looking internally, talking to my wife, and learning the process moving forward. And I do think the junior military organization that I worked with, they were very helpful. They were very helpful in understanding the interview process, understanding what they're looking for, but not a lot of resources that I used. And that was just kind of where I was in my life at the time. I tended to look internally for answers, and I learned over my career to reach out to people, learn from people's stories out there, learn from their successes, learn from their failures, and at the end of the day, weigh that all that evidence in and to find out really what you need to do moving forward. And I also learned by failure, too. I remember my first interview with a large pharmaceutical company. It was with the HR person. It was a phone screen. And they asked me to sell windows in a role play to a builder. And I failed so miserably in that first interview. I thought my throat was so dry because I had never actually sold anything. And I knew it didn't go well when she asked me, how do you think you did? And so right then and there, I learned you just got to relax.
Yeah.
Be yourself in the interview. Be conversational. Don't follow the script and know what the objectives. And I think that's what we learn so much in the infantry, especially, is at the end of the day, here's the high ground and here's what we need to do to get there. We are going to get there one way or another. And that's what I learned that. So I learned from my mistakes too. I made a lot of them. And
yeah.
I finally, about 3 months later, 2 months later, found a hiring manager that was bought the story and was part of what I could do. And then I felt indebted to that hiring manager. And to this day, work ethic. It's just one of so many things we learn. It's the self-discipline, but it's that work ethic as well. Do the right thing, follow the game plan, know when you have to deviate, but never lose sight of what the objective is. And in that stage, it was to get doctors to prescribe the medications that you prescribed. And then as you roll into that and get into the corporate environment, I was with a large pharmaceutical company starting out. They had excellent corporate training as well, too. Not only how to be a sales rep, but I got involved in the leadership development process as well. And I learned 360 feedback. You do these personality tests. You do these personality quadrant tests. Are you a driver? Are you an expressive? Are you an amiable? Are you an analytical? And I remember my first leadership meeting, taking that test for the first time, and I was almost all red. I was almost all driver. You know, I'm very analytical, but I didn't test very high on the expressive side, and I didn't test very high on the amiable side. If I take that same test nowadays, I score almost equally in all four quadrants. And it's kind of one thing you learn in sales and sales management is kind of, you know, sometimes I hate to use the word chameleon, but being able to relate to all the different types of people. And I was able to do that as well, too. So those are some huge resources I had early on in my career that have helped me immeasurably as I've gone through.
Yeah, that's really good. And it's so true, too. To be a salesperson, you have to be that person that can be a chameleon, or at least be empathetic and sympathetic to each of the different personality types if you're going to be a professional salesperson. You know, if you just don't care and you're just going to, you know, do it the Ranger way and just, you know, bash your head through the wall until it works, you can do that too, you know, but there is definitely a finer science to it. So I'm interested in this one particular thing. You know, so you get out in 99, and then obviously in 2001, all hell breaks loose, Twin Towers. Was there any part of you, being that you got out so soon to that, that said, man, I want to go back in?
You know, at the time there wasn't. And I remember at that time in my life, I was a young dad and my career was moving forward. And I just felt like I made the right decision. I was happy with what I was doing. And I'll touch on that a little bit more, but I remember getting a letter from the Department of the Army in 2000, and it was an invite to join the Individual Ready Reserve. And I looked at that, I didn't respond, because the way I'm wired is either I'm going to play on the varsity or I don't want to play at all.
Right.
So I felt at the time I made the right decision. But John, to that question, and to this point, I don't have a regret getting out when I did. It's been a good career, very close to my children right now. I've got a good relationship with them. But I do sometimes look back at some of the people, and most of the people that I served with did not, they got out of the Army shortly after I did, or about the same time. But I do know some people that have stayed 20 to 25 years, and to see everything that they've accomplished, the resources that they got, the advanced degrees, the master's degrees that came with serving. Yeah, there is always a part of me that says, what if?
Yeah.
But there's no regret. It's been a really, really good run so far. And I'm at the best point in my career right now. And even where I'm at right now, age-wise, I have as much, if not more, energy than ever before. But it just goes back to all those things I learned about myself and learned about others.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
Well, that's actually a good segue, too, because one of the points of this podcast is to show transitioning military members that you don't have to be the smartest, you don't have to be the best looking, you don't have to have the West Point network, you don't have to have any of those things. So you went from being an enlisted guy to an officer, getting out in 99, and now you're a vice president.
Correct.
Like, you've had this track of success, and you know, it's not a slight to you, but neither of us are the best looking guys around, right? And here you are now as a vice president of a company. Talk to us about that and how that really came about.
Yeah, I think, and I appreciate the compliment, John. Yes, I agree. You know, one thing I've learned over time, I'm a huge sports fan, and it just goes back to playing sports in high school and all the things I've learned. I've learned a lot of things. I've been exposed to a lot of former trainings over the years, and I value and treasure every bit of the learning that I've been able to do. But I remember going back to that first hiring manager that hired me. I asked him, what are the best people doing? Because my first year in sales, I took a territory, like a lot of people, that was at the bottom of the ranks. And in my first year, I moved into the middle of the ranks. And I was nowhere near satisfied. And my manager was like, hey, good job. You come from the basement, and now you're back on the first floor. Let's talk about how to get you to the next level. And I asked him, I said, what are the best people doing out there? What's the secret sauce? Well, there's no real secret sauce other than just block and tackle. And it was some of the best coaching I ever got. Do the basics and do them really well. And I'm like, what are those basics? And we had a sales model that we followed, and I've been exposed to several different sales models over the years, but they kind of follow the same thing. But our model was, it was an acronym called PAIDINC, P-A-I-D-I-N-C. So P is pre-call planning, do your homework. This goes back to being in the Army, your IQB, your intelligence preparation of the battlefield. Know the situation, or Sun Tzu. I think Sun Tzu said it best. Know yourself, know the enemy, know the terrain really well. Understand what you're going into. A is approach. How do you approach people? And that's something I had to work on early in my career. Don't look like an Airborne Ranger necessarily when you walk in. Smile. Talk to people. Build relationships, right? The nurses, the people at the front desk, everything. That's the approach. Let the guard down a little bit. You come at them with a suit tie. You come at them with a sales brochure. It's a doctor that's seeing 60 patients a day. And they're looking at you like, what do you need? Where do I sign? How do you let their guard down a little bit? How do you get that approach down to just get 10 or 15 meaningful seconds and hopefully turn that into 10 or 15 meaningful minutes? So that's the approach. And then the I is the interview, the ability to ask good probing questions. Dr. Jones, what's important to you? When you see this patient right here, what's your outcome that you're looking for? What's most important to you? What do you need when you see this patient when it comes to this type of pharmaceutical product? And then the D is to demonstrate, the ability to show what your product is. I somehow stands for validate what it means, features and benefits, negotiating, the ability to negotiate obstacles, turn objections into selling opportunities, and close. And it's not a linear process. They all work together, and it's wash, rinse, and repeat. But that's really what we talk about. It's just do the basics well. A, show up every day. Make 15 calls a day when everybody else is making 8, 10 calls a day. But be effective in those calls. Be persuasive in those calls. And ultimately, in sales, what I've learned is a lot of times you're looking to persuade somebody to do something that they're not already doing. And coming up with win-win solutions and really positioning your product in a way to do that. So really, the blocking and the tackling. And then as it evolved into the sales leadership, then the first step is to demonstrate success in the sales front. So my second year as a sales rep, I won President's Trophy, and I was in the management development program. So that's the first step. If you want to be in management, if you want to be in leadership, a lot of corporations are going to want to know that you can demonstrate that first at the individual contributor level. Once you can do that, then you have credibility. Then it's getting into management. Then it's getting involved with other people, getting feedback on how it is. And then I rolled into the management program. And another year, I was a trainer and then a district manager. And then I left pharmaceutical department in 2005 and went into medical device sales. And that's really where I've been for the most of my career since 2005.
Okay.
And I'm at right now. And that progression is just continuing to be a sponge. Learn. Do your job well. Demonstrate that you can do your job well. Teach it to other people so they can do it well. And that's where you really get into the leadership thing. And then you start growing into developing leaders, hiring the right people, hiring the right leaders. Because once you can hire the right people, what's the old saying? If you hire the wrong person, 95% of your job is ahead of you. If you hire the right person, 95% of the job is behind you. You work on the fine points. So that's kind of the next step for me, getting into management and really building teams and finding the right reps, following a good interview process and finding good people. And now I'm in a position where I'm blessed to be able to work with some great leaders and managers and helping coach them and develop them. And passing on all my failures over the years and what I've learned and how I fixed them. Hopefully they learn from my strengths, but also working with them, for them to unleash and harness their internal strengths as well, too. So it's just really been an amazing journey, and it's an ongoing journey. Sales and sales leadership is an art more than it is a science, and it's evolving. I'm a student of leadership. I'm a student of best practices, and I'm a student of understanding what doesn't work, why it doesn't work, and how you make processes better moving forward.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Jim Rohn?
I have.
Yeah, so Jim Rohn, he says the same thing you just said, which is that you got to be a student of the game. He says that education makes you a living, but that self-education, that being that sponge, is what makes you a fortune. And he really ties down this idea of being really rooted in the basics. And you probably see it as well. I have an experience with a gentleman that was in sales for a number of years, and he got off into all this tech stuff, all these tech stacks and all this and all that. And I kept coming back to the question, well, does that really increase your numbers? The fundamentals of sales are what gets you more sales. Tech stacks help. Like, I'm not saying we don't need tech, but nowhere have I ever seen anybody go from 0 to 100 because they had the right technology.
Right. Agree.
Yeah.
Well, I think regardless of what's in the bag, and kind of dovetailing on that point a little bit, John, it's something I'm passionate about right now. It's control what you can control.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, we, in my position right now, our team, we can never control if a hospital, if or when or who signs a purchase order for a large piece of capital equipment or a piece of durable medical equipment. At the end of the day, we're not there making somebody sign anything or prescribe anything. And that's kind of, you know, what you do every day in sales is you're never in full control of that. But what we are in full control of is our inputs to the situation. Our activity, when we show up, how often we show up, our consistent, you know, commitment to the process, and in what we say, and in what we know. And it's just continuing to be the strongest athlete you can be to educate the market on the full capabilities of your technology. Whether they need it for certain uses or not, let them tell you that. But our job is to get out there and educate the entire market. And in our market, it's healthcare professionals that treat certain disease states. Educate them on what the technology is. Don't let the world tell you so-and-so isn't interested. And that's some of the best feedback I got, too, and some of the worst feedback I got, too. I remember my first field trainer, when I was back in pharma back in 1999, took a look at my list of doctors to target and said, don't go here, go here, here's where you need to spend your time. And I found completely the opposite to be true. I'm the ranger. You're the ranger, John. We are there to go where sometimes places may be risky or dangerous. So I went right after the people that my trainer told me not to go after. And I had great success with those people. And
then yeah, because nobody else was.
Right, exactly. And then I found out that, you know, where he told me to go wasn't really a fish full of a lot of pond, or a pond full of a lot of fish. So follow your instinct. Do your homework. Follow your instinct. Don't be afraid to go to dangerous places, go where people haven't gone before, because just because somebody else before you in sales failed with a certain segment of the customer base, they may take one look at you and say, come on in. That's why diversity is so important in sales too. Not only diversity of gender, diversity of ethnicity, but diversity of thought and diversity of approach. Do it your way, do what you've been trained, follow your instincts, think big, take calculated risks, and be assertive out there.
Yeah. You know, so because we come from the same cloth, you're one thing that I talk with a lot of sales organizations with that I really kind of try to get them to understand from a military perspective, which is if you don't have SOPs, then how do you know what's broke? If you don't have a standard operating procedure, then how do you know it's John that's messed up and not you? Right. And I've seen this so much in sales. SOPs aren't that you have to do it this way. It's a structure so that when we all operate at our peak, we all know what everybody else is doing. And we also know what the barrier or the bar is for success and failure. And we have standards that then we can judge by. And it's so crazy to me how many sales organizations don't actually have pipelines for training, SOPs for performance. And you know, when that's what you and I learned how to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, and John, it's kind of the art and the science of an SOP. For example, if you're a hiring manager out there, whether you're in sales or anywhere out there, the ultimate goal when you're hiring somebody is to find the best person you can hire. We definitely, and that's what I've something I've learned. Some of the best people I've been privileged to hire is when I followed the process. And I've made mistakes hiring people over the years too. And I found out that some of the mistakes I made is where Maybe I got a little bit too comfortable with my own ability to feel somebody out. And I said, follow the process. But, you know, you follow the process, you follow the SOP, yet you always keep the objective at the end of the day. The objective in sales is to grow the numbers, is to grow the sales. And I think it's just kind of, you know, that art of knowing, don't take your eyes off of the ball. Whether you miss a step or two in an SOP or do it a little bit different than the SOP says, always keep your eyes on the high ground, which is defined, in my case, the best salesperson you can find. And when you follow that process, it's key. And it kind of goes back to something when I was a platoon leader at Fort Campbell, going out on my first field exercise, the battalion XO came up to me because I have a sniper team attached to me. And that's not something that you really train on a lot in IOBC or in range school necessarily. For the first time, I had a sniper team attached to my platoon. And he was a triple tabber. Huge amounts of respect for this particular XO that we have in our battalion. I've actually had some contact with him over the years. He went on to be a two-star general, but he put his arm around me and said, Lieutenant, don't overthink it. Just tell the snipers where you don't want them to go. They'll figure out the rest. So that was kind of the SOP. So that was kind of the art of it, too. It's not do this, do this, do this, do this. It's just tell them where you don't want to go. They'll fill in the rest, too. So it's kind of an art, too, in how we leverage SOPs, follow the key steps in the process. You may have to do things a little different, but don't take your eyes off of the ball, which is to grow the business. And in the example of hiring sales representatives, you know, your goal is to find the best person you can.
Yeah. You know, even outside of military, right? This conversation of SOPs and then what we always used to call commander's intent. I was just talking with a couple of sales leaders and they were getting all bogged down into the details. And I was like, hey, scratch that stuff. Like just for a little bit, like none of that stuff matters. What the hell's the commander's intent here? Like at the end of the day, what's the job?
You know, and I remember that. You know, and John, we did this over and over and over again in Ranger School, and you do it over and over again in units. It's that paragraph two of the operations order that I always remember, the mission statement and then the task and then the purpose. And I remember, you know, and great NCOs that I was so blessed to be working with, you know, sir, we're so caught up in the purpose, just tell them what to do. And it's like, but we got to understand the purpose. So the purpose is to breach the obstacle, or the task is to breach the obstacle, but the purpose is to allow follow-on forces to come get that. That way, if the point man or the sergeant or the squad leader goes down, the next man up, the corporal knows, okay, I'm not quite sure what we're doing here, but I know that we got to open this thing up somehow so follow-on forces can get through. And I use that to the day. It's almost like the SOP is the task, but the purpose is to grow the business.
That's right. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and if we understand purpose, regardless of what the industry is, because not everybody's going to be in pharmaceutical sales or medical sales, doesn't matter. As long as we understand the purpose and then we understand general structure, we can fill in the blanks to get here, all the way to the commander's intent or the company's bottom line purpose. You know, if it's, you know, reaching out to doctors and getting doctors to move a particular way inside their industry, if you know that, then does it matter if you use ho-hos and Twinkies or, you know, lunch from Olive Garden?
Exactly. Yeah. And being able, especially in sales leadership, being able to empower your people, not only how to sell, but how to always understand the mission. Because each sales call is going to be different. You meet one sales call, you meet one sales call. Every one of them is going to be different. You do your best to follow the process that works. But at the end of the day, when you have and you never lose sight of that commander's intent and the overall objective of what you're doing, you'll figure it out. Good people will figure it out. And that's such a big part of the sales leadership or any leadership is just empowering your people to figure it out. And it just goes back to our roots in our case, the infantry. And I know there's several people on this call that come from multiple branches of the service. Thank you for all you've done. And but keeping an eye on that. And I think the other thing is just kind of left and right limits too. I mean, when you go to the range, you know where the left limit is, you know where the right limit is. Everything between the left and right limit is in play. Go figure it out. Be smart. Be agile.
Yeah, absolutely. So you brought this up because we do have a pretty wide audience of people transitioning. you know, and for you to have gone through everything that you've gone through and now to be in senior leadership inside of a really successful company, as these men and women are transitioning, and some are, you know, younger. We have one in class right now. She's 25, but then we've got one that's 45, right? So we have a really broad spectrum of age and gender and race, which I love, because like you said, in sales, it really is about having that diversity, not just of who you are, but of opinions. What would you say to them as they're making their transition into a career in sales and business? Some of the like most important lessons you've learned.
I think it's just kind of going back to the conversation a little bit earlier, is just the purpose. What is your vision for your life? If you're just going to pick sales because you heard that people in sales make good money, you have to understand what your internal motivations are. I was attracted to sales starting out in part because of the money, but I also love the autonomy of it. I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I get to technically work from home, even though I'm out in the field 5 days a week calling doctors. You have a company car, you have a laptop, they give you all these resources to go out there. But for me, the autonomy of it was attractive. And I knew that as an infantry leader, that if I prove myself as a sales representative, that moving forward, I could also have the opportunity to bring out other people and help grow other people's careers as well, too. But I think it's just knowing the your commander's intent. What is your intent with what you want to do with your life? And knowing what you like and what you don't like. And just take that look in the mirror. What makes me happy? What do I enjoy doing? For me, all the things that sales brought made me happy. There's other people who are bad fits for sales. They are. They sometimes want to be able to control everything. It is sometimes a little scary to know in sales that at the end of the day, you can't control those numbers when you come in on Saturday morning. It's like, oh my gosh, I had a bad week. What happened? You know, who didn't use my product? You know, and some people struggle with that. Some people have to have their hands on that. Maybe those people could be better fits for a career in an operation field where maybe there's a little bit of tighter management on an assembly line or something like that. So really, just if you're going into sales, ask yourself the question, why do you want to get into sales? For me, I wasn't able to ask myself those questions. And that's why I've been in sales ever since I left the Army. Some people get into it for the wrong reasons, and they don't like it, and they get out and they do something else. And that's okay, too. We learn from our mistakes. But I think the biggest piece of advice that I would give is just really, really have that self-awareness to know what you want to do and why.
Yeah, man, that's so good. Dude, thank you so much for your time today and your advice. What's the best way if somebody's interested in medical or pharmaceutical sales, what would be the best way for them to connect with you?
Yeah, you can hit me on my LinkedIn page. That's probably the best way to do it.
Okay, great. So I look forward to, you and I talked before the show started. We're going to bring you back on. We're going to do some stuff with you and your company at a bigger level. I'm excited to hear more from you because you think just like I do. I don't know if it's brainwashing from Ranger School or from the Rakasans, but that's my approach to sales as well. And so this was really fun for me. And I'm going to post on the show notes, I'm going to post our picture from Ranger School on the one I sent you where I'm like, you're here and this is me. Because it's so crazy how interconnected the world is. And here we are 25 years later, figuring out that we were in the same class. Almost more than that.
Looking at that Ranger picture, it looks like a Where's Waldo exercise. I mean, even to this day, when I blow that picture up, it's hard to really believe that was me. And the funniest part, and I love to tell people that when we were in that picture, that was 3 days after we had our dog X finishing in Florida. So we'd already probably gained back 10 pounds.
Yeah, right. Dude, my mom, because I was, I would have been 20, I think, at that point. Maybe I was 19 still. So I was real young. My mom came down and picked me up from Fort Benning, and she was like, you should have let me know, because I wouldn't have come and picked you up if I would have known we were going to stop every hour and a half to eat.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, no, John, to your question earlier, people can find me on LinkedIn. It's John Elzinga. I don't think there's many of me on LinkedIn, if any, and I use LinkedIn a lot. And that's a great way for people to reach out. But always here to help serve the veterans and with the transition, especially because I remember the transition clearly. And just know that what you learned in the military, whatever your MOS was, whatever your functional area was, whatever branch of service you come from, you are well prepared to go into the civilian world. And the biggest thing is know what you want to do and why, and don't let the world tell you what you're fit for. You determine what you're fit for, learn from your mistakes. During your transition, you probably will fail some interviews just like I do. Learn from them, look inward, not outward. Yeah, only look at yourself and say, how can I do it better next time? You know, and always be looking at the next step in the process. Always be looking forward and leverage all the great skills that you've learned in the military, because you are well prepared to succeed wildly in the corporate and the civilian world.
Great, man. Thank you so much for your time today. Look forward to having you back on the show.
Thank you, John. Rock us on, and thank you, everybody, for joining today.
Follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Sales Platoon for more updates and veteran success stories. Join us next time as we continue to decode the art of selling through the unique perspectives of those who've served.